Peterson, if you want to go on and start, Bill is very close to joining us, so.
All right, Madam Chair, we are recording and broadcasting, and the floor is yours.
All right, so welcome to our board members, the staff, and also our attendees. It is the Santa Ana Regional Water Quality Control Board meeting for Friday, March 12, 2021. And so we're starting the meeting. So we can start with introductions. If Jeannie could call the board members' names, and we can start with introductions.
Board member Letitia Clark.
Present.
Board member Joe Kerr.
Present.
Board member Daniel Selmy.
Present.
Board member Dr. Tom Rivera.
Present.
At this time, I just got a notice from Board Member William Rue. They're still trying to get him into the meeting, and he is here at the office. Vice Chair Chris Murray.
Present. Good morning, everyone.
Chair Lana Peterson.
Here, definitely here, and good morning, everyone. Okay, perfect. So at this point, we can move on to item number two, which is public forum. And as of right now, there are no public forum signups. Is that still accurate?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, perfect. So we can move on to item number three. I just want to make sure that is Bill or board member Rue on?
Not
oh, there
yet.
He is. I see
yes.
him.
Okay, great.
Well, he's close. It looks like it says connecting to audio. And we're only waiting because it's board member or item number three is regarding board member Rue. So,
what do I unmute? Okay, I'm here. It's just we had a computer problem. So I'm in the meeting.
Hi, board member Rue.
Hi there.
Welcome.
I'm sorry, we just had a problem. It's what happens with technology.
We can see your smiling face behind the mask, I'm sure.
I'm here at the board office, so I like to try to keep everybody safe.
Perfect. So we're at item number three, which is recognition of past chair William Rue. So I'd like to read the recognition and then invite other board members to make comments if they so choose. Are you ready?
Yes.
Chair Rue. As I've told board member Rue, who's always going to be chair to me, so I'm going to go ahead and read this. So item number three, subject recognition of Chair William Rue. William Rue has been a member of the Santa Ana Water Board since 2002. In 2009, Mr. Rue was elected vice chair of the Santa Ana Water Board, and in 2014, he was elected chair. For the past 7 years as chair of the Santa Ana Water Board, Mr. Rue has provided strong and effective board leadership. He has been very active in statewide water board leadership efforts, including participation in the annual chairs meeting and participation in the annual water quality coordination committee meetings. Under Chair Rue's tenure, the Santa Ana Water Board has had numerous accomplishments, including, but certainly not limited to, the following. 2009-2010 adoption of the municipal stormwater permits for Orange County, Riverside County, and San Bernardino County. 2016 adoption of the conditional waiver of agricultural operations in the San Jacinto watershed. 2017 adoption of the Newport Bay Watershed Selenium total maximum daily load. Adoption of the scrap metal facilities stormwater permit in 2012 and 2018. Resolution of long-term wastewater treatment issues in the city of Beaumont in 2020. 2019 adoption of the Newport Bay fecal chloroform time schedule order and 2019 adoption of the Human Right to Water resolution. For all these efforts, along with the ongoing Poseidon Huntington Beach desalination permit process, Chair Rue has always conducted Santa Ana Water Board meetings, public workshops, and public hearings in a professional manner with an emphasis on ensuring that the public has adequate opportunity to address the Santa Ana Water Board In all instances, his leadership and public outreach have served the Santa Ana Water Board and the public very well. The Santa Ana Water Board thanks Chair Rue for his past leadership and look forward to continuing to utilize his expertise and experiences in future Santa Ana Water Board actions and endeavors. So thank you, Chair Rue.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the support I received as chair, and I look forward to continuing to work with everybody. I believe we've got a great board, a great team, and I never doubt we have the best interest of the region when we make our votes.
And so thank you. And at this time, I just want to open the floor to anyone that'd like to make any comments.
I just want to say that I read the resolution, and the word that came to mind was kind, that Bill was very, very kind. And I said, no. I think the better word, a better adjective for Bill and his contribution to our board is that Bill is just a good person.
Thank you.
I see him as a very, very good person, not only to people that he works with on a daily basis, but also outside the organization. Like Bill, you mentioned, taking care of your pets and then taking care of children that the word just good just came to mind. So thank you very much for all that you've done for us.
Thank you, Doctor. It's most appreciated.
Yeah, I'd like to just chime in that I was doing the same thing that Tom was doing, trying to think of words that describe Bill. And the ones I came up with were courtesy, collegiality, efficiency, and concern. And the concern is both for the mission of the board and for the public. So, Bill, that describes you for me anyway. Thanks for all your efforts.
Thank you.
And Matt, I know, Lana, I'm the same. I want to say, Mr. Chairman, Bill, truly, you're such a dedicated and passionate public servant. And it's been an honor to work with you during my tenure on the board. And thank you so much for your leadership.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair.
Yeah, I'd like to mimic all those. You'll always be, Chairman Emeritus to me if we have such a thing. But thank you so much. Yeah, you're quite the gentleman. You ran really good meetings. And I know it's hard, especially when I think we had 2 days with a couple hundred folks speaking each day, 9 hours long. It was, and I think they were like my first meetings. I'm like, what the heck did I get myself into? But you ran them well, and that's a gift. That is a gift to run those kinds of meetings where everybody gets a fair shake, everybody has an opportunity to speak, and you treat everybody with dignity and respect. And I just want to thank you for that.
Thank you. Thank you.
Bill, I'll say that I haven't been on the board long, but after our first meeting, you ended with a poem, and I was very moved, and I could just tell how thoughtful of a leader you have been, and I'm jealous that everyone had the chance to experience your leadership for so long, but I'm honored to continue service with you.
Thank you very much, Director.
Thank you, everyone, for those nice words. I will say that it is not outside my head that I might delegate doing public comment for some of our larger board meetings. No, I tease completely. But yes, thank you so much, Bill, for I know when I came onto the board, it was it's a lot when you're first coming onto a board like this. And I have had really no idea. And I would say that you were very crucial into kind of me understanding what kinds of questions I should be asking and what kinds of things I should be absorbing from the information that's been shared. So I really do thank you for that. And I do think that it's really hard to pick a best dressed board member between you and former board member Von Blassingame, but the bow ties, love them, keep them up. So thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's been great to work with all of you as chair, and I look forward to working with you throughout the rest of my time on this board.
Mm-hmm. So perfect. So we will move on to item number 4. So State Water Resources Control Board Liaison Report. I think Mr. McGuire, there he is, and he's ready to give his report, I'm sure.
Oh, always. Good morning, everyone. Good morning, and Chair Peterson, good morning. Board member, former Chair Rue, those were very nice words that everyone shared. And I'll say that I've been your State Water Board liaison for over 2 years now, actually. And I've really been impressed also with your leadership of the board during the majority of that time. And you know, your patience and your meeting management skills. I echo that. I've that's not gone unnoticed for me. I have the privilege of being the liaison for three regional boards. And of course, I attend my regional board or my state board meetings every 2 weeks.
Right.
And so I've had a fair amount of exposure to different boards and how they operate. And you definitely did a fine job managing difficult issues. So thank you for your contributions.
Thank you.
So today I thought, you know, normally I come to you and try and continue our relationship building. The purpose of the state board liaison is it's an informal role. You know, it's really for us to, you know, better collaborate on issues between the regional boards and the state board. And it's been difficult over, to say the least, I mean, for all of us, for everything that we've been doing over the past year with COVID. But I have, you know, a lot of optimism for the remainder of this year and what we can accomplish together. And hopefully, you know, at some point we'll be back in person again. But I realized that you may not be fully aware or just informed as to all the different activities that we do at the State Water Board. And so I just wanted to take a few moments to share a document that our state board puts together annually, and that is our strategic work plan. And for us, you know, this is our opportunity as board members to get together and look at, you know, all of the different priorities for our different responsibilities for the year and figure out what, you know, what really rises to the top in terms of, you know, our preferences and priorities for important and pressing water issues that we want to move forward. It's not an easy process because there are so many different issues. I'm sure you're, you know, experienced that yourself at the Santa Ana Regional Board. But I just, you know, wanted to share this with you and just open up a conversation if you have questions about what we do. So if you could go to the next slide, please. So, you know, one thing to keep in mind here is that we actually all share the same mission. And that is to preserve, enhance, and restore the quality of California's water resources and drinking water for the protection of the environment, public health, and all beneficial uses, and to ensure proper water resource allocation and efficient use for the benefit of present and future generations. And that's a mouthful and a very lofty but noble mission, I would say. And it really does. I look at it and I try to find words I can take out of there that we don't need to shrink our mission a little bit, but it's all important. All those words were carefully chosen. And it really is, it speaks to the challenges that we face because we're, you know, we're really trying to accomplish all of it. We really want, you know, water of the right quality, quantity for the right place for all the different uses, whether it's for our cities, for agriculture, for our ecosystems, for, you know, today and future generations, we're really trying to make all of that happen. And that's not easy. You know, we've come a long way, certainly, since the Clean Water Act passage, since Puerto Cologne enabling legislation in California, and we have a ways to go. So, you know, for us, you know, at the board, we try to look at it in 1 year bites here, and that's what our strategic work plan is about. Next slide. So just as a reminder of what we do at the state board, it's, you know, it's not just, you know, it's certainly water quality, developing statewide policies, general statewide permits on different issues, water quality control plans, working with the regional boards on so many different water quality related issues is, you know, an absolute core responsibility that we have. We also, of course, have water right allocation and management responsibility. And certainly this year could end up being fairly challenging if you've been following the news closely about our hydrology and the dry year conditions. You know, I would say the jury's out a bit as to whether we're entering another drought at this point, but certainly it's cause for concern that we just haven't received the amount of rainfall and snow that we would typically hope to see in a year. So, you know, that's where water rights becomes very challenging. And we certainly had experienced quite a bit of that during the last drought. You know, drinking water is another thing. You know, actually an outgrowth of the last drought was that the State Water Board took under its wing the Division of Drinking Water in that program. And so, you know, from that really grew to encompass all aspects of water management and water quality protection for human health statewide. So with our Division of Water Quality, Drinking Water, and Water Rights, you know, that really does fold, I think, a comprehensive portfolio of responsibilities. So it's been a lot to take on, certainly, over the past few years. There have been some growing pains as we've taken that division. You know, with they had their own, you know, they were at the California Department of Public Health previously and had their own processes and culture there. And so it's, you know, it's been a process to take them under, but I would say certainly now we're really, you know, moving forward steadfastly. And that's drinking water is, as you know, and I've talked with you about multiple times, is a top priority for us. And then the last two here are Division of Financial Assistance. Actually is our largest division at the state board, staff-wise, given our, you know, hundreds of millions of to, you know, sometimes more grants and loan funding that we issue every year for really critical water and wastewater, stormwater, and other natural infrastructure projects. So, you know, I look at, you know, incentivizing, you know, restoration and, you know, necessary, you know, treatment improvements and other improvements as a key function at the board. In fact, just had a meeting on it this morning. And the last piece, of course, is, you know, not quite as fun as the Division of Financial Assistance, where we're giving out money, but important nonetheless, and that is compliance and enforcement and accountability, certainly for our permittees and dischargers within the state. And so, you know, it's tough but necessary to have that branch as well. Next slide. So our strategic plan is really, it's broken into four different goals. And I had to go through and actually count each of these goals has sub bullets, and then each bullet has specific projects listed in it. And so what I'm not going to do is go over 81 individual projects that we decided are our priorities, because for some reason we weren't able to distill it down to a smaller number than 81. And that just is a testament to, you know, our staff and how much work that we are actually able to move forward and advance concurrently. But I just want to summarize the goals for you. So the first one here, and I would imagine that we all share these goals. I don't think there's anything earth-shattering about it, but the first one is to protect public health by ensuring reliable access to safe, affordable drinking water and sanitation. Certainly, you know, with our human right to water that's codified in state statute, you know, we're all trying to make progress to ensuring that all Californians have access to safe drinking water. You know, we still have challenges there with, you know, at any given day, somewhere on the order of 300 public water systems that aren't meeting drinking water standards currently. The good news is, of course, now we have consistent funding with our SB 200 Safe and Affordable Drinking Water Program, which provides $130 million a year for drinking water infrastructure projects. So that's, you know, exciting and good, and we're making a lot of headway there. We're just in the first year now of that funding. And at the same time, we have to have a forward-looking view as well. So looking at emerging contaminants like PFAS, which I think you've recently had an update on, microplastics is an emerging area, and some legacy contaminants that we all are very familiar with, like hexavalent chromium, where there's, due to various court issues, there's not currently a statewide standard in place. And so we're working on that right now and hope to have that at least to the board for consideration later this year. So just a lot going on in this space, obviously, Yeah, no, it's a top priority for us. Next slide. So the second one is protect and restore watersheds, marine waters, and ecosystems. And, you know, it's the same here where, you know, I think we all look at the beneficial uses of our waterways for, you know, recreation, whether it's for diversion, for municipal use, for agricultural use. We're trying to preserve and protect all those different beneficial uses, and that's hard to do. You know, we also look at our ecosystems, and so many waterways in the state have been, you know, degraded over the decades for various reasons. And so, you know, at the board, we try to look at, you know, our different tools in the toolbox. One is, you know, water quality protection, certainly, which you're involved with, and the other is areas like minimum in-stream flows. And that's something that our Division of Water Rights focuses on. And so, you know, areas like looking at, you know, the type of hydrology that each stream needs, the timing, the temperature, in a given year, in order to support ecosystem functions, is an area of increased focus for us. And there was a California Environmental Flows Framework document that was recently released back, I think, in December. And that really tries to, for the first time, set some statewide recommendations for flows in all types of streams and rivers throughout the state. So we're really advancing this, this approach. And so just wanted to highlight that for you as well. There's more to come on that as we go forward. Next slide. And, you know, this is, you know, certainly, we're thinking about climate change all the time. The wildfires last year, you know, 4 million acres of California burned, sadly, and the prospect of facing another drought here, or if it's not this year, then it certainly could be next year or the year after. And I think every year we need to be investing as much as possible in building that resilient water supply, whether it's, you know, a combination of new sources of supply from, you know, recycled water, direct potable reuse, you know, looking at groundwater recharge and augmentation, or water conservation being another source. So we have responsibility over all those different areas. We're working on direct potable reuse regulations right now, which will be a first in the country, which are due to be completed by 2023. And you'll hear more later this year about water conservation as a California way of life, which is statute laws that were passed in 2018, which set a requirement for the state to establish basically water budgets, water conservation budgets for every water system by next year. And so this is a program we're working in partnership with the Department of Water Resources. And so you'll start to see some of the recommendations come out and additional discussion there. But, you know, again, that was something that came out of the last drought is, you know, we're all in this together. We have a limited supply in the state. We need to, you know, learn how to use water efficiently and not waste it. And so that's where you'll see some, you know, quite a bit of discourse, and especially if we're in some dry times here. And then, you know, also things, looking at things like, of course, better utilizing stormwater as a resource, and trying to incentivize those types of really, you know, truly beneficial projects that provide multiple benefits, like water quality improvements at the same time, augmenting supply, are all things that we're looking at. Next slide. And the last goal is strengthening internal capacity and systems. And actually, as I, you know, as I read this goal and I read the bullets below that, and I really believe that this is more about our role and responsibility as an outward-facing organization. It's really about reaching out and increasing our capacity there. So just look at these bullets. You know, we have incorporate effective public participation into state water board decisions and support effective partnerships, track and communicate the water board's work, managing data effectively, and supporting an evolution of organizational structures, processes, and culture. This really all speaks to our commitment as an outward-facing and transparent organization with, you know, sufficient public process to really engage the communities that are affected by our different decisions. I know you share that commitment as well. And we're, you know, really with our racial equity initiative, which is making good progress, and with, you know, so much of our other outreach efforts that we've been working on better improving this past year, this is a really exciting and important area of investment for the board as well. And, you know, another one of those is just what we've learned, I would say, over the past year during the pandemic, with COVID, you know, our ability now to better leverage technology through Zoom and other interfaces, and thinking about, you know, what will our interactions look like after the pandemic is over? How can we continue to use this technology to make sure that we're able to provide opportunities for, you know, all affected and interested stakeholders to participate in our decision making? Is it's an exciting space and an area that, you know, we're definitely thinking about actively. You know, how do we transition going forward? Next slide. So just briefly, you know, in COVID, you know, last year, I think we were all concerned about our ability to continue to get work done and to continue to advance important initiatives. And I know you were able to continue moving forward, and we were as well at the State Board. Here's just a list of some of the things that we were able to get across the finish line. And, you know, for example, our administrative hearings office, it's a new water rights hearings office. Very exciting. And they actually had to fully get started and rolling with a brand new office and a public hearing process, and had to do it all online. And I'm really proud of what they were able to accomplish, because they really demonstrated that they were able to start working through our backlog and the challenges that under the previous arrangement, all water rights hearings would have to come to the State Board first. And now they're able to go to this administrative hearings office with hearing officers, attorneys that are basically filling the duties of a judge in so much as a responsibility. And so it's a really important, I think, transition for us and ability to just for us to do more. And I won't go over all this list, but we've obviously been advancing our safe and affordable drinking water program, which I mentioned. Our PFAS investigations continue and will continue. And we're continuing the early steps of a regulatory process there as well. And so much more to come on that this year as well. And we were able to adopt statewide laboratory regulations and update those sorely outdated regulations last year as well. So I'm, you know, thinking back to 2020 and what we were able to accomplish, I'm, you know, really proud of what we were able to do. Next slide. So then that brings us, of course, to this year. And this list here is just our, you know, we have, you know, 81 actions, which I promised I wasn't going to list out for you. But our strategic work plan is online. You can go to our State Board website down at the bottom. It talks about board priorities. There's a link, and you can pull up our document if you want to take a look at it. But there are these items that you see here have little asterisks next to them on our list. So of the 81, these are the ones that we're absolutely committed to as the top tier priorities that if needed, we will dedicate additional resources and bandwidth to make sure that progress is made on these. They're not all 1 year, you know, actions that we think that we can complete this year necessarily, but we want to make significant progress on them. So, like I mentioned, Chromium 6 and direct potable reuse and conservation already. I'm sure you're aware of Sigma and stormwater. So there's a lot here. And so what I think I will do is just stop here and open it up for questions. And I'll leave this slide up if you want to ask about any of these or anything else for that matter. But I hope this helps just give an overview of kind of where we are at the State Board and some of our priorities for the year. So thank you.
Sean, this is Bill Rue. One of the questions I have is, in looking to the future, whether we're in a drought now or we will be one in one at some point, we always are. Is there anything at the state level where they're planning to try to find a way to make sure that the compliance is there? During the last drought, the state had some very good orders in place, and yet there were a lot of people who were getting around them. It depended on where you lived. Certainly, we saw that our lower income communities did a much better job of conservation than our very well-to-do communities. Is there something in the works to make sure that it's that, you know, if a low income community can conserve water, so can a high income community?
Yeah, I would think, you know, equity and fairness is certainly, you know, part of what we need to be thinking about. That's, you know, where we're going with the conservation as a way of life regulations is it sets water budgets for each water system. So what we're doing is looking at, you know, how much water does a typical household use for indoor water use? How much water based on, you know, the size of the property, the type of landscape do they need for outdoor water use and other, you know, other uses, like if you have a pool or a garden or something like that. And then, you know, how much water does a water system typically lose? There's every pipe leaks. And so, you know, we're developing regulations right now to control the amount of water that's lost underground, essentially.
Right.
So we're looking at all those different aspects of a water budget and setting those. And so every water system will have that to work with. And so, you know, I think, you know, the compliance is going to lean heavily. You know, we don't have enough, we don't have people that can go out to every water system and, right, and inspect. So it really leans on those water agencies to kind of manage their own system and make sure that they're implementing conservation measures or making programs available for those communities to achieve the community goals.
I know you mentioned swimming pools in the last drought. You know, people with swimming pools, that's great. It's wonderful. But just because you need to have a swimming pool shouldn't take away the drinking water from the low-income family that, you know, they're struggling just to feed their families. So, you know, when we look at equity, I hope we look at some of that.
Well, we don't want to find any community that's in a situation where they don't have, you know, they turn the tap on and no water comes out.
Right.
So those are situations that we would obviously take very seriously. I don't think we're at that stage at this point, but we would take stronger action if it came down to that. There were definitely communities in the San Joaquin Valley during the last drought that had relied on wells that were relatively shallow, and there actually many of their wells went dry. And so we went and provided support to them. We provided emergency bottled water and worked with, you know, to really find solutions for the short term and also for the long term, so that
hopefully Porterville comes to mind. There are a lot of problems. Yeah. Thank you.
Yep.
You bet. Hey, Sean, this is Joe. I had a quick question for you, if I could.
Sure.
Maybe I should know this, on the winery order, I'm kind of curious because I know wine country, Sonoma, Napa, we lost, according to Senator Dodd, who covers that area, lost about $7 billion due to the wildfires, and he's coming up with SB 209, and part and parcel of that through UCSD Scripps, we're going to be mapping all the wildfire corridors, fuel and so forth, kind of down to the leaf level just for future mitigations. What is the winery order? I just wanted to see if there's some layover there.
Oh, sure. So there's actually a check mark there because we've already adopted it this year. And so it's a winery order for winery process water. So it's water quality requirements. Essentially, it's a statewide order. So any winery can enroll, and it just provides guidelines and requirements for treating or managing really that process water. And so the level of requirement depends on the size of the winery. So basically the smallest don't really have to do much of anything. And the large ones have to do quite a bit in terms of just trying to protect groundwater quality.
Okay, got it. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. All right, does anyone else have any other questions? I'm not seeing any. Okay. John, I think you have more.
Just one thing, Madam Chair. I'd like to thank Sean for giving us a refresher course on our responsibilities as board members. So, Sean, thank you for the report.
Sure. It's my pleasure. Always happy to be able to come and join you and, you know, really look at me as a resource and, you know, a colleague in terms of trying to move forward these important initiatives and other priorities that you have at the board. So, you know, this time is really for you, and I'm always open to talk about any topic that is of interest. So I wanted to do this today just to give you some food for thought about all the different issues that we could discuss. And, you know, feel free to Chair Peterson or work with Executive Officer Smythe. I'm always happy to come back to you and discuss any issues that are of interest. So thank you for the time.
Thank you for being here. Okay, that being said, I think we can move to item number 5. So that is the regional board meeting minutes of February 5th, 2021. So I believe Jeannie sent those. So if we want to get a motion to pass those minutes, that would be great.
So, Madam Chair, this is Bill Rue. I'll motion for the minutes as provided in our packet.
Okay.
Second.
Board member. And then it looks like there's a second from Board Member Clark. So, Jeannie, if you can do the roll call vote, that'd be great.
Board Member Letitia Clark.
Aye.
Board Member Joe Kerr.
Aye.
Board Member Daniel Selmy.
Aye.
Board Member Dr. Tom Rivera.
Aye.
Board Member William Rue.
Aye.
Vice Chair Chris Murray.
Aye.
Chair Lana Peterson.
Aye. Great. Okay, so we can move on to the consideration of the consent calendar items. As of right now, it looks like all the consent items are still on consent. So if I can get, and I think you guys noticed that Jeannie sent over errata sheets for the items. So if I can get a motion.
Madam Chair, this is Bill Rue. I will make a motion for the consent calendar containing items number 7, 8, and 9 and the errata sheet that was sent out.
Perfect. Thank you. And can I get a second?
A second.
Oh. Perfect. Thank you. No, perfect. Thank you, Board Member Kerr. So that being said, Jeannie, could you do a roll call vote again, please?
Yes, Chair. Board Member Letitia Clark.
Aye.
Board Member Joe Kerr.
Aye.
Board Member Daniel Selmy.
Aye.
Board Member Dr. Tom Rivera.
Aye.
Board Member William Rue.
Aye.
Vice Chair Chris Murray.
Aye.
Chair Lana Peterson.
Aye. Okay, perfect. That leads us to item number 10. And so this is an update on the TMDLs for bacterial indicators for the Middle Santa Ana River watershed. It's an informational only item. And I believe we have Barbara Berry. I thought I saw her. There she is presenting. So I will turn it over to them.
Thank you. Good morning. So I'll be presenting the item. Yiping Cao from my unit will also be available for technical questions on indicator bacteria. So like Chair Peterson said, I'll be going over the total maximum daily loads, or TMDLs, for bacteria indicators for the Middle Santa Ana River watershed. Next slide, please. So Santa Ana Water Board staff have been working closely with the Middle Santa Ana River Task Force for many years to promote water quality improvement in the watershed. And it's been a while since we have updated the board on our progress towards the achievement of the TMDLs. So I'm here presenting to you today an informational item to provide some background on the Middle Santa Ana River Bacteria Indicator TMDLs. They'll include a brief history, information on the TMDLs and who they apply to, and some insight into the current conditions of the watershed. Following my presentation, we will hear from the Middle Santa Ana River Task Force and their activities towards complying with the TMDLs. Next slide, please. Now to get into some history. Samples collected in the Middle Santa Ana River watershed in the 1990s contained fecal indicator concentrations that exceeded water quality objectives. Due to these exceedances, several water bodies within the watershed were listed as impaired on the Clean Water Act 303D list. The designated beneficial use adversely affected by the elevated fecal indicator concentrations was Rec 1, also known as primary water contact recreation. This use is for activities involving body water contact, where ingestion of water is reasonably possible, which includes swimming, wading, and fishing. Next slide, please. Total maximum daily loads, or TMDLs for indicator bacteria, were then developed and adopted for the watershed to address these impairments. These TMDLs were adopted on August 26, 2005. A TMDL can be thought of as a plan to bring an impaired water body back to meeting water quality objectives. It involves calculating the amount of pollutants allowed to discharge into a water body so it can still meet water quality objectives. Next slide. The Middle Santa Ana River watershed is located in San Bernardino County, Riverside County, and a small portion of Los Angeles County. It's 488 square miles in size. This map demonstrates the boundary of the watershed in red and the jurisdiction of the Santa Ana Water Board in light blue. Next slide. Looking more closely, displayed are the water bodies within our region in blue and the boundary of the Middle Santa Ana River watershed in red. Next slide, please. This map focuses in on the water bodies originally listed as impaired for indicator bacteria within the watershed. Again, a water body is impaired when water quality objectives are not met. In this case, the indicator bacteria water quality objectives were not met in these waters. And these waters include, next slide, highlighted in orange, Prado Park Lake, next slide, Mill Creek, next slide, Chino Creek, reaches 1 and 2.
We're not getting the designations of the different locations. Oh, there we go.
Sorry, what was the question?
No, that we were just not getting the whole picture of the rivers that were affected.
Oh, okay. Can you see it now?
Yes.
Okay. I apologize for that. So highlighted in orange, Chino Creek reaches 1 and 2. Next slide. Cucamonga Creek, highlighted in orange. Next slide. And the Santa Ana River reach 3. Now I'll discuss what a fecal indicator is and why it's a concern in the watershed. Next slide, please. Fecal indicator bacteria are used as indicators of the presence of pathogens, such as bacteria, viruses, and parasites, that can pose a public health risk. Because of analytical difficulty and cost, it's not practical to monitor receiving waters routinely for pathogens themselves, so surrogates such as E. coli are used. E. coli is an indicator of the presence of fecal waste from humans and other warm-blooded animals, which can pose a significant risk to public health. Other fecal indicators include total coliform, fecal coliform, and Enterococcus. Next slide. Studies have linked levels of fecal indicator bacteria to the risk of illness. These illnesses can include gastroenteritis, with symptoms such as diarrhea, vomiting, and nausea, upper respiratory illnesses with symptoms such as sore throat, cough, runny nose, cold, or fever, eye infections, ear infections, infected cuts, and rashes or itchy skin. Next slide. Now, looking at the fecal indicator bacteria within the Middle Sinai River watershed, concerns were first raised due to fish kills in Prado Park Lake observed in 1979, 1983, and 1989. This led Santa Ana Water Board staff to investigate the cause. Staff believe the fish kills were likely caused by waste overflows from dairy facilities, which could result in elevated nutrient concentrations, depressions in dissolved oxygen concentrations, and elevated bacteria levels. Samples were collected during storm events in 1993 and 1996 to 1998. Samples in 1993 were greater than the upper detection limit for the analytical test. And in 1996 to 1998, many samples were several orders of magnitude greater than the water quality objectives. These sampling events led to the listing of these waters on the Clean Water Act Section 303D list, as the concentration exceeded water quality objectives to protect direct contact recreational beneficial uses. Dry weather samples were also collected in 2002 to 2004. These samples contained concentrations of fecal coliform that confirmed impairment listing of the water bodies within the watershed. Next slide. This then led to the development of the TMDLs. Again, a TMDL can be thought of as a plan to bring an impaired water body back to meeting objectives. It involves a calculation so the water body will meet, it involves a calculation of the maximum amount of a pollutant allowed to enter a water body so the water body will meet and continue to meet objectives for a particular pollutant. For the Middle Sinai River, that pollutant is indicator bacteria. There are several steps involved in developing TMDLs, including identifying all potential sources of pollutants and assigning allocations of allowable pollutant to responsible parties. The Middle Sinai River Indicator Bacteria TMDLs were adopted on August 26, 2005 by the Santa Ana Water Board and approved May 16, 2007 by US EPA. Next slide. Sources of indicator bacteria in the watershed identified in the TMDLs are confined animal feeding operations such as dairies, urban discharges, agriculture, and natural sources such as open space and undeveloped forest land. Next slide. The parties identified as being responsible for the sources of bacteria are as follows: confined animal feeding operators, the U.S. Forest Service, agricultural operations such as irrigated and dry land farming. Next slide. And urban dischargers. This includes the cities within the boundary of the watershed in the county of San Bernardino and the county of Riverside. Next slide. Several of the responsible parties within the watershed formed the Middle Sinai River Watershed TMDL Task Force. The task force was created to address bacterial indicator issues in the watershed and implements the TMDLs. The task force has been working cooperatively with the Middle Sinai River, the task force has been working cooperatively with the Santa Ana Water Board in the Middle Sinai River watershed for many years. Next slide. Now looking at the TMDLs themselves, TMDLs were developed for fecal coliform and E. coli. I'll focus on E. coli as an amendment to our recreational standards in the basin plan in 2012 removed fecal coliform objectives. The TMDL for E. coli is a logarithmic mean or geometric mean of less than 113 organisms per 100 milliliter for any 30-day period. In that same 30-day period, no more than 10% of the samples can exceed 212 organisms per 100 milliliter. A logarithmic mean or a geometric mean is a special type of average. It's a calculation intended to prevent one number from dominating the sample subset. So it tends to dampen the effect of very high or very low values. This is beneficial when looking at indicator bacteria concentrations, since they can fluctuate widely. Next slide, please. The TMDLs were developed to apply year-round, but different compliance dates are specified for dry season and wet season discharges. During dry summer conditions, defined as April 1st through October 31st, the due date is no later than December 31st of 2015. For wet winter conditions, defined as November 1st through March 31st, the due date is no later than December 31st of 2025. The intent of dividing wet weather and dry weather compliance deadlines was to ensure that dry season recreational beneficial uses were addressed on a priority basis. Also, additional time was allowed to address complexities associated with the control of wet weather discharges.
Barbara, excuse me for a second. The due date for what?
Oh, to meet the TMDL, sorry.
Okay, to meet the DM. Thank you.
Sorry if that wasn't clear. Next slide, please. Moving into the requirements of the TMDLs for the responsible parties, all responsible parties were to develop and submit a watershed-wide monitoring program. This was submitted and approved by the Santa Ana Water Board and has been revised several times. Confined animal feeding operators and agricultural operators were to develop and implement an agricultural source evaluation plan and an agricultural source management plan. These plans were both submitted to the Santa Ana Water Board. Next slide. Urban dischargers, or MS4 permittees, were to develop and implement urban source evaluation plans, which were submitted and approved, and also to revise stormwater management programs and water quality management plans. This was completed and incorporated into the 2010 San Bernardino County and Riverside County MS4 permits. For those unfamiliar, MS4 stands for Municipal Separate Storm Sewer System. MS4 permits are stormwater permits for municipalities. In 2010, MS4 permits, as well as the permits for the cities of Pomona and Claremont, also required the development of comprehensive bacteria reduction plans, or CBRPs, to comply with the dry weather condition TMDLs. Next slide. The provisions in these permits required the development of the CBRPs and allowed that CBRPs can serve as an alternative to compliance with the dry weather bacterial indicator TMDLs. This alternative would involve the development, submittal, and implementation of a plan in accordance with the schedule and guidelines outlined by the regional board in the MS4 permit. The CBRP is also required to identify the means by which dry weather TMDLs will be met. CBRP implementation relies on a stepwise approach that implements key actions to identify controllable urban sources of bacterial indicators, evaluate and select a mitigation alternative, and where necessary, construct structural BMPs to mitigate controllable sources. These plans were submitted and approved. Next slide. In 2018, Santa Ana Water Board staff conducted an audit of the CBRPs for San Bernardino County and Riverside County. The audit was performed to review and assess the MS4 permittees' efforts in complying with permits and to determine the program's progress in implementing the CBRP. Overall, the auditors concluded that there were no indications of any violations of the water quality-based effluent limitations, the CBRP requirements, or the implementation schedules related to the bacterial impacts during dry weather conditions. Some of the other findings of the audit included that there's a benefit in updating the CBRP after the TMDLs are revised. This would prevent duplication of efforts when a further update of the CBRP would be required after the TMDL is revised. The auditors also recommended a consensus is needed to support a conclusive, transparent determination regarding compliance with the TMDLs, and that this process should be developed and subjected to public comment after the update of the TMDLs. It was suggested during the audit that encampments along the riverbeds could discharge pathogens during dry weather. However, the auditors recommended these assertions should be based on evidence other than proximity of the encampment to a water body. Lastly, there was a recommendation that the permittees develop clear criteria for addressing homeless encampments. Next slide, please. Now, looking at what the data show, some sampling stations around the watershed show a decreasing trend over time in dry weather E. coli concentrations. However, the TMDL is not being reached at most sampling locations, with recent data indicating 75% of geomeans from the 2019 dry weather data set are above the TMDL during the dry summer season. Prado Park Lake samples, on the other hand, have improved in recent years, with the 2019 dry weather data indicating only 6% of geometric means are exceeding. Also, during wet weather, some sites have concentrations in order of magnitude larger than dry weather concentrations. Next slide. Looking at trend data over time, displayed as a graph included in the Synoptic Study and 2020 Triennial Report. It represents dry weather E. coli geometric mean concentrations over time. This graph is displaying data from the Mill and Cucamonga Creek sampling station. The dots on the graph are geometric mean concentrations of E. coli collected during dry weather. The red dotted line at the bottom of the graph is the TMDL, so the water quality level that we want the water bodies to meet. The data show that the geomean concentrations have been trending downward over time at this location, but are still above the TMDL. Next slide. On the other hand, some stations do not show clear trends, like this example from Chino Creek. Again, this is displaying calculated geometric means from dry weather data, except this time we're looking at a station in Chino Creek. From this graph, it's not apparent if the geometric mean data is trending downwards or not, and the concentrations are above the TMDL level. Next slide, please. Although we are currently resource limited, the next step would be to consider revisions to the Middle Santa Ana River bacterial TMDLs. This could involve incorporating statewide bacteria provisions, reviewing wet weather allocations, and assessing data collected since the adoption of the TMDLs. Now with that, I'll hand it over to Tess Dunham and Rick Wetzel, representing the Middle Santa Ana River Task Force.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the board. I'm Rick Wetzel, Senior Watershed Project Manager with the Santa Ana Watershed Project Authority, SAPA. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you on behalf of SAPA and the Middle Santa Ana TMDL Task Force. One of the key functions of SAPA's planning department in serving the Santa Ana River watershed is building relationships through collaboration among regulators, SAPA member agencies, and regulated parties. Over the past 30 plus years, SAPA has provided capacity by serving as administrator and as a participating member on a number of multi-agency task forces within the watershed. This includes providing a neutral venue and forum for supporting ongoing facilitation of the stakeholder processes. Through these task forces, we're able to achieve greater efficiency, economies of scale, reduce costs, and or increase benefits in addressing water resource challenges in the watershed. Today, we are here specifically to provide an update on the efforts and accomplishments of the Middle Santa Ana River TMDL Task Force and its stakeholder members with regard to the Middle Santa Ana River TMDL bacterial indicator TMDLs. Next slide, please. Since 2001, local stakeholders working with SAPA and the regional board have supported the Santa Ana Regional Water Quality Control Board in their effort to assess water quality and develop bacteria indicator TMDLs for water bodies within the Middle Santa Ana River watershed. Following the adoption of these TMDLs by the regional board in 2005, local stakeholders working with SAPA staff formed the Middle Santa Ana River TMDL Task Force, the purpose of which is to implement the requirements of the Basin Plan Amendment to address pathogen water quality impairment to the Santa Ana River and its tributaries that make up the Middle Santa Ana River watershed. The benefits derived from this collaborative task force effort include a healthier Santa Ana River and its tributaries, measurable surface water quality improvement, particularly for dry weather flows, and efficient and cost-effective efforts towards TMDL standards compliance. Next slide, please. Stakeholders participating in this multi-agency task force administered by SAPA include the County of San Bernardino, represented by their Flood Control District, the County of Riverside, represented by the Flood Control and Water Conservation District, the cities of Chino, Chino Hills, Corona, Eastvale, Fontana, Harupa Valley, Montclair, Norco, Ontario, Rancho Cucamonga, Rialto, Riverside, and Upland, as well as the cities of Claremont and Pomona, which border the watershed. The task force also includes the University of California Riverside, agricultural operators represented by the Chino Basin Water Master Agricultural Pool, dairy represented by the Milk Producers Council, and the Santa Ana Regional Water Quality Control Board. And on behalf of SAPA, I want to express our appreciation to the regional board and its staff for your ongoing support of this multi-agency collaborative task force effort. Regional board staff participation in the many task force meetings over the many years has been crucial in helping us make forward progress in the spirit of cooperation and consensus. Next slide, please. This graphic, which is included in your packet, presents in a timeline format a number of efforts successfully implemented by the task force and its stakeholder members over the past 15 plus years, the key highlights of which will be covered by Tess Dunham shortly. On this graphic is depicted key regulatory events. These are light blue across the top. Plans to achieve TMDL compliance shown in green. Continuing annual TMDL compliance monitoring shown in gray. Studies and activities coordinated through the task force. These are shown in orange, red, and I'm going to call it the light brown. And then there are studies, activities, and projects that have been implemented by the individual MS4 permittees. And these are the items shown in purple and dark blue. And with that, I now want to introduce Tess Dunham of Conn, Sorries, and Conway, who will guide you through the balance of the presentation to update the board on the various activities implemented by the Middle Santa Ana River TMDL Task Force and its stakeholder members. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Rick. And we can go ahead and go to the next slide. Introduce myself. I am Tess Dunham. I am with the law firm of Consorries and Conway in Sacramento, and I am a water quality attorney. But my role with the task force is I act as the regulatory facilitator. So my job is to facilitate the discussions with the various stakeholders, facilitate conversations with the regional board staff, and to just kind of keep things moving, right? So we can all achieve the success that we would like to achieve with respect to meeting the waste load allocations for the total maximum daily loads. So just a little bit here, and Barbara touched on this, and so I won't spend a lot of time, but the key implementation mechanisms for achieving the TMDLs really derives from either permits or some other form of agreement. The waste load allocations themselves within the TMDL as part of your basin plan are what we call not self-executing. And they are imposed on the dischargers, the controllable sources within the watershed, typically through permit actions, such as the MS4 permit for the municipalities, the CAFO dairy permit for our animal feeding operations. And then for irrigated agriculture, it's more through an agreement with the Chino Basin Water Master for those that are under the Chino Basin Water Master's ag pool. Next slide, please. And as Barbara indicated, and actually we can go to the next slide. I'm going to spend most of my time here today, just in light of the fact that we have a limited amount of time, focused in on the implementation of the bacteria reduction plans, which were incorporated into the municipal stormwater permits for Riverside and the San Bernardino programs in 2012. Again, your permits were adopted in 2010. The 2010 permit for the municipalities required that they prepare these bacteria reduction plans, which then became their water quality-based effluent limits upon approval by the water board. Just one clarification, we have here on the slide two dates. We have a February 2012 and a September 2013 date, just to provide some clarification. The 2012 date refers to when the water board approved the bacteria reduction plans for the Riverside and the San Bernardino programs. The 2013 date actually refers to when this water board adopted waste discharge requirements for Pomona and Claremont to prepare bacteria reduction plans, which were then submitted to this board back in 2014. But most importantly is not so much when they were approved, but the implementation of the bacteria reduction plans. One of the fundamental components of the bacteria reduction plans is really they are designed to achieve the dry weather waste load allocations through a fundamental approach of eliminating and or reducing dry weather flows from the MS4 systems themselves, right? The bacteria reduction plans have determined that the best and most effective way to address the bacteria loads from the municipal stormwater facilities is just to eliminate dry weather flow itself into the watersheds to the extent feasible. So there are the three main steps with respect to implementation of the CBRPs. Step one is that ongoing iterative and adaptive component where we do source evaluations by doing monitoring and what we call our tier one sites, which I'll speak a little bit more to. We identify where our controllable sources are. We then actually move up the watersheds to do more intensive monitoring and investigation to further identify where the controllable source is through monitoring at our tier two sites and through investigation. And where we also implement a number of non-structural BMPs, and we identify structural BMPs. By non-structural BMPs, I'm referring to such things such as water conservation ordinances, pathogen control ordinances, cleanup of homeless encampments, street sweeping, and many other activities. And then I'm also going to spend some time on their structural components that have been implemented throughout the watershed. When we have identified the need for the structural BMPs, step two is that planning and the design and the permitting for those to implement those management practices. And then, of course, step three is the construction of the BMP itself. Next slide, please. The main component here I want to show on this map is really just to illustrate what I mean by a tier one monitoring location and a tier two monitoring location for our investigations and to prioritize where we believe we are having controllable sources from the MS4 system. You will see here the purple circles along the primary water bodies that have been listed as impaired. And then you will see a series of green boxes. And the purple circles are our tier one locations. These are the outfall locations where the municipal MS4 discharge to the water bodies. And then as you go up into the watershed, you see the tier two sites, which is the further investigation of those municipal stormwater systems and the tributaries to those downstream tier one sites. There's also on this slide, it includes where we have our TMDL compliance monitoring locations and other types of monitoring that occurs. Next slide, please. This is just the kind of same information in a slightly different graphic to better, summarize the process. We first prioritize, we collect data at our tier one sites. We have an ongoing regional monitoring program where we do annual monitoring, but we also go in every so often, every 6 years or so, and we do a comprehensive monitoring component to further prioritize our source evaluation so we can better determine where is the dry weather flow coming from, because it does change over time as we have implemented our structural as well as our non-structural management BMPs. So first we collect data at our tier one sites, which we showed in our purple circles, which is where the urban sources of dry weather flow directly discharge to the downstream impaired water body. We prioritize those based upon the risk to recreation. As Barbara indicated, the beneficial use of concern here is that recreational beneficial use, and we want to make sure we are protecting those that recreate in the water bodies. We then move up and out into the watershed to do further investigate and identify the sources of bacteria and the sources of dry weather flow, which would carry the bacteria. And then finally, we mitigate. And that I'm going to spend a fair amount of time on giving you some examples of some of the specific structures and actions that the MS4s have taken in order to address dry weather flow. Next slide, please. Slide, please. And just to here illustrate how we have, you know, the program has been adapted over time, indicated that we have so far done what we call three, you know, significant comprehensive prioritizations to identify the highest priority areas. You know, obviously, we have to be mindful of resources. We like to do everything at once. It's not practical. So we do go in and we prioritize, and then ABLE can focus in on the highest priorities. Our first prioritization had indicated the Box Springs Channel, Chris Basin, and the County Line Channel. Then in the second go around, we start identifying the Anza Drain, the Eastvale Lines, Upper Chino Creek, and again, Chris Basin. And then most recently, we just completed last year our 2019-2020 synoptic study. And through the work of that program, we identified the Magnolia Street Drain, the Sunny Slope Channel, and again, the Anza Drain. And we've had a number of actions that have taken place over the time to address the priorities as they've been identified. Next slide, please. And I'm going to walk through these just to really give you a highlight as to what are these types of actions, right? I think it's helpful to have actual examples so you understand the work that the program is doing. I also understand a couple of our MS4 permittees or representatives of the programs are participating today as well as far as public comment. And if you have further detailed questions on these projects, they'd be more than available and happy to fill in some of those details. But one example, we indicated, you know, one of our first areas of priority, we indicated the Box Springs Channel as part of our urban source evaluation, which was actually done back in 2007 after adoption of the TMDL itself. What the locals did was from this information at the monitoring location, they went in and they investigated the upper, you know, everything that flows to that monitoring location to try to determine what was causing this frequent and persistent detection of human source bacteria. And through these local investigations, they basically found that there was a cross connection between a sanitary and a storm sewer cross connection. And what we did, we repaired it, right? So where we had this problem, they were able to identify a cross connection that was problematic, fixed it, and follow-up monitoring clearly showed that we were no longer observing human source bacteria. Again, that investigation is key to determine where is that controllable source coming from. Next slide, please. Here is what we refer to as the Chris Basin Retrofit Project. And this project, I think, is pretty illustrative of some of the issues we face with some of our retrofit projects or our structural BMP projects. As I think we indicated before, the Chris Basin has been identified as a priority for a couple of our prioritizations and was early on. This was based upon the fact that the Lower Deer Creek sub-watershed that is tributary to Cucamonga Creek had received a high priority ranking. After evaluating several different options, the San Bernardino MS4 program determined that the best option was to retrofit the existing flood control basin known as Chris Basin. This retrofit was basically to, instead of having stormwater or dry weather flow just traverse directly through the basin, would be to have it traverse across the basin back and forth, which then allows bacteria to be degraded via UV, right? Sunlight. And so that project, the conceptual planning, started back in 2010. And for a number of different challenges, including endangered species listings and others, it was a lengthy permit process in order to be able to be ready to do the retrofit so we can now traverse dry weather flow and inflow back and forth across the basin. We just completed the permitting process back in 2019 and 2020. A final permit that was obtained was from the Fish and Wildlife, California Department of Fish and Wildlife, for a 1600 permit.
We then last summer, we also conducted our pre-retrofit monitoring so we can evaluate the effectiveness of the retrofit once it's completed, and we are ready to begin construction. So an example of how a great project identified early on can take time in order to get to construction just because of our, you know, permitting processes at no fault to anybody. Next slide, please. Another example of a structural BMP is the Cucamonga Creek Watershed and the Mill Creek Wetlands. You know, this is a this wetlands has been developed for multiple uses, but it does provide the benefit of reducing pollutant loads for bacteria for both dry weather and wet weather. So this is another example of those structural BMPs, but it also is a great example of our need to have BMPs that have a multiple benefit, right? We want to make sure that we're not just creating a one benefit project, but if we can serve multiple benefits for habitat and for supporting recreation, and at the same time reducing pollutant loads, and not just for bacteria, but other pollutants, then I think we have a great success on our hands. Next slide, please. The next two slides are actually, you know, kind of what's been talked about a lot more frequently is how are there opportunities to divert stormwater into the sewer system so it is treated like wastewater, right? And we do have a couple of projects that have been identified within the watershed for these storm drain to sewer diversion projects. The slide here talks about what the Eastville Line D&E storm drain project, which is currently in development with the Harupa Community Services District. There has been the evaluation of water quality and flow, so we can determine the feasibility of diverting the flow to the Community Services District. It has been decided that instead of just diverting dry weather, there's a desire to make sure that we can also divert wet weather, knowing that we are starting to need to address the wet weather issues as well as we've addressed the dry weather issues. The Harupa Community Services District is in the process of expanding the recycled water distribution, and that kind of needs to come first before they can take into the stormwater flow, so they have a place to distribute the stormwater flow. Both projects are identified in the 5-year capital improvement project budgets for both the cities of Eastvale as well as the Harupa Community Services District. So that project is in process. The next slide, please. Another storm drain to sewer diversion project is at Phoenix Avenue, which has been a priority. This is a joint project with the City of Riverside and the district. And we are really excited to say that construction starts next week on this project. So it is great as it will be the first sewer diversion project in Riverside County. And we will be excited to come back to you and provide updates as to the progress of the construction and what happens once it is completed and what that means for water quality and for diversion of controllable sources out of the watershed to the sewer system for treatment at the wastewater treatment plant. Next slide, please. What I want to talk about here is kind of explain a little bit how our tier two study process, right? We talked about how we start with our tier one sites, identify where we have MS4 discharges of dry weather flow and identify those areas that are a major priority. And then how do we investigate where we have created our priorities? In our most recent, what we call our synoptic study, that the Magnolia Center storm drain site was identified as our highest priority. And that was identified just last year in our 2020 study. Since then, the county of the Riverside Flood Control District, as well as the City of Riverside, have worked jointly to go forward with what we call a tier two study, which is that more intensive investigation. And through the work that they've been able to do, and they have the ability to provide far more detail than I'm going to here today, they've taken basically a 7,000 acre drainage area. And through their monitoring that they've conducted through 2020, they have been able to narrow down that whole drainage area to the where they believe the controllable issues are coming from to about 1,000 acres. So we were able to, now they will be able to focus in on the sub-drainage area of the 1,000 acres to then conduct further investigations and determine where the dry weather flow is coming from into the MS4 system. And then they can identify the mitigation activities that will be necessary. But this is, again, it's a process and it's one step, you know, after the other, so we can identify where that dry weather flow is coming from. Next slide, please. Other type of BMPs that the programs have implemented is addressing homeless encampments and having cleanups when those homeless encampments in particular, as you can see here in the photos, are in the MS4 itself. Clearly, this creates a lot of complicating factors, right? This is not something that the MS4 program can do on its own. It has to be coordinated with numbers of different agencies within the county and the watershed. There are challenges, there are safety concerns, there are land ownership issues. There has to be good communication, right? We need to communicate to those that are living in the encampment, as well as communication amongst all the agencies prior to going in and doing a cleanup. We have hazardous waste disposal issues with the cleanup. What happens if there's property that's been confiscated? How is it stored? So while these are necessary and they are ongoing, and I believe there's actually one that's just been recently scheduled in Riverside, they are complicated. And not to mention the societal issues that we are all aware of and, you know, the need to try to find services for those that may be disturbed when their encampment is cleaned up. So, but it is something that's important because it is a potential impact to water quality. And there are just safety concerns of having encampments in the middle of a stormwater channel, which is not something we want to see. Next slide, please. Another part of, I indicated early on that one of the biggest parts of addressing dry weather flow from the municipal stormwater system is diverting dry weather flow for other reasons and purposes, such as for recharge. And, you know, where you have the appropriate, you know, geologic area that where you can do this, such as in San Bernardino County, recharge basins can be really important. And basically taking the flow and recharging it to groundwater and hydrologically disconnecting the stormwater from the watershed itself. And San Bernardino County has been doing this for a number of years. They have 118 recharge basins. And through the use of the recharge basins, they are really able to show how it limits the amount of dry and frankly wet weather flow that actually reaches our compliance locations. And it allows us to demonstrate how we have the hydrologic disconnection between an MS4 and the impaired water bodies. Next slide, please. So that kind of gives you a snapshot of what we have been doing over the, you know, when we get through our evaluations, our tier one and our step one and our iterative process and the different types of projects that have been and are being implemented. But where are we now? And where do we go from here, right? We've been doing this for dry weather since, the CBRPs have been in implementation since 2012. What are our challenges that we're looking at now? So going to the next slide. You know, the land use and the watershed continues to change. I don't think it comes as any surprise to you, but back in 2005, when the TMDL was adopted, there were an estimated, 215,000 dairy cows within the watershed. As of last year, we're down to less than 70,000. This is a decrease by almost 70%. We also know through the CAFO permit and the requirements that have been imposed on the dairies, there really is no dry weather flow that comes out of the dairy Chino Preserve area into the MS4 system and into the watershed. And that is actually discussed in one of the agricultural source plans that has been submitted to the Water Board. We also continue to see a decrease in irrigated acreage throughout the watershed. And of course, we see an increase in urbanization. So this is one of the changes that has happened since 2005. Next slide. We also have seen a significant reduction in the dry weather flow itself. You know, Barbara was able to demonstrate for you the changes with respect to concentration of bacteria in the watershed and how it's, you know, why we haven't achieved the concentration values. What we have been able to show is a huge decrease in dry weather flow itself, at least of the controllable sources. And I'll talk a little bit about the uncontrollable sources. But through our three major studies that we've done in 07 and 2012, and now again just in 2019, what you can show here is the significant drop of dry weather flow from the MS4 system that goes into the and at the compliance locations at Chino Creek, the Santa Ana River at MWD, and then of course Santa Ana River at Pedley. And these are averages of CFS, cubic feet per second. And you can see here the 2019 is the orange bar, which definitely illustrates how much we have, you know, how the dry weather flow has declined since 2007 going into the water bodies. Next slide, please. Another key component of this that, you know, has happened for a number of different reasons is we have a continued reduction in POT effluent flow, which has been our base flow in the water bodies. And, you know, in some ways is often, you know, for lack of a better term, dilution, because as we know, our POTW effluent is treated to an extremely high quality. They treat to remove, you know, fecal indicator bacteria, but they have the discharges of POT effluent into the Middle Santa Ana River has declined dramatically. This is increasing because we have increases in recycled water. We've had major water conservation over the years. And with that, we now see that you can see here our reductions in the effluent flows are on the graph there. They're a little more difficult to read, but POTW effluent flow is the primary flow within the water body itself. Municipal stormwater flow is only at about 3% when you're looking at all flow during dry weather season into the main water bodies in Chino Creek and in the Santa Ana River Reach 3. Next slide, please. So if we've, you know, I'm sure many of you are asking, well, if we've reduced dry weather flow from the MS4 systems, and we don't really have flow from the dairies or the irrigated agriculture, but we're not meeting our water quality concentration-based waste load allocations, where is the bacteria coming from? And in our 2019 study, we kind of further drilled in and did some additional evaluation besides looking at the tier one source evaluation sites, which is the water coming in from the MS4s. We looked to determine what are the potential loads coming from within the river itself. And we found that about 75% of the bacteria load, and again, this is the load, not necessarily the concentration, we believe, and is documented in the 2019 study, is coming from within river sources itself. What are within river sources? Well, recreators themselves. You know, we have people that are out recreating in the river. We have wildlife. There's other processes that are being investigated as to what we call biofilms coming out of the sediment, right? We may have a lot of bacteria that's just naturally within the sediment. It's been asked, how have you been able to figure out the 75% maybe coming from within what we call the within river sources? And on the next slide, what I will show you is we, as part of our study, this last go around, we evaluated and monitored and basically evaluated bacteria loads at you can see here, the Mission River site, which is that orange purple dot, which is upstream of any MS4 contribution. So we basically, the only contribution, you have the Rialto wastewater treatment plant and the Ricks facility, which were far upstream. We know what the quality of the effluent is that comes in from the wastewater treatment plants. And so then we evaluated what was the bacteria load in that section of the water body in the Santa Ana River in order to calculate the bacteria load. Since we knew it wasn't coming from the MS4s, because the MS4s are all downstream. And that's where we came up with the 75% component. Mm. Next slide, please. Here again, talking about loads, one of the key components of the bacteria reduction plans was we, instead of just looking at a concentration based, again, we talked about how fundamental goal and purpose of the bacteria reduction plan was to reduce the load by reducing dry weather flow from the MS4 systems. The load reductions that from the CBRP here is that that green hashed arrow. And what you can see is we have significantly met the load reduction requirements from the CBRPs, except at Chino Creek. But even at Chino Creek, that while it doesn't show very well up here on the bar graph, we've reduced the load by about 80%. So again, that's all equating to less dry weather flow, less bacteria load going into the water bodies themselves. Next slide. And I'm not going to spend any time on this. Rick already covered it, other than to say that, you know, we've tried to find a way to provide a colorful graphic that tries to summarize everything, and far too detailed to look at on a slide, which is what has been provided as a handout. Hopefully that is something that's made its way to you all. And then I want to just talk a little bit about next steps. Next slide, please. So what happens next? You know, the work doesn't stop. The work doesn't stop for dry weather where we're at now, and the work doesn't stop with respect to what happens with wet weather. We have this impending compliance date of 2025. We continue to address and look at how we can coordinate efforts for understanding homeless encampment impacts on water quality. SAPA has conducted an assessment in 2020, and they have just approved following basically some additional monitoring program to further evaluate the impacts of homeless encampments on water quality and habitat in the watershed. And I'm certain that we'll be coming back to you to provide an update on that. But SAPA is undertaking that with a number of the stakeholders that are members of the task force are involved in this monitoring program, so we can all try to better understand what those water quality impacts are. Next slide. And as Barbara indicated, we've got this impending 2025 compliance date for the wet weather TMDLs. I think, you know, we've all thought at this point we would have an update to the TMDL at no fault of anybody, but we are where we are, and we need to start looking at how do we address the wet weather component, and what updates may need to happen with respect to wet weather. And what do we need to do with our comprehensive bacteria reduction plans, which were designed for dry weather based upon the 2010 permit? And what do we need to do to adjust them for moving forward to address wet weather? I imagine that, you know, the general process is fundamentally the same. Identify the source, investigate the source, and identify the mitigation action. But that is something that needs to start happening soon. And we continue to look forward working with your staff and you all on the next steps. And we're just really, you know, I'm have learned a lot. And I think our task force has really been able to show the significant success of how it can work when everybody works together and has a method, you know, a very methodical approach to investigating sources and then addressing the sources. And with that, love to take any questions you may all have.
Madam Chair, I have a question for Ms. Dunham. During the last year with the pandemic, we found more people are at home. They're working, they're going to school from home. My thought is perhaps they're using the watershed in a general sense for more recreational activities because there is not a lot for them to do. Do you know, or do we have anything to quantify whether or not the pandemic has made the watershed better or worse? I'm just thinking with so many people home, they're out doing things and They can't go to movies. There's no parks that are open. There's not a lot for them to do. So I'm thinking the watershed becomes the default place to do things.
You know, I don't know myself, Board Member Rue. You know, we continue to do our annual monitoring program, and I'm certain we'll be able to evaluate the monitoring results from past years. Even with the pandemic, the monitoring program has continued. So we do continue to monitor on a frequent basis throughout the watershed. And I'm certain that's something that the task force and its members can evaluate through our monitoring program is to have we seen some type of a, increase with respect to, the COVID issues. I know that there have been some more challenges in being able to access some of the monitoring locations, because one of the unfortunate things we've also seen is an increase in homeless encampments.
Yes.
During this time period. And that has caused some accessibility issues of sites that we used to monitor at. But, definitely something that I'm certain we'll look and evaluate through our evaluations.
And with the homeless encampments, clearly it's a multi-agency issue. We have to work with so many different agencies. In that, among those agencies, is there anyone involved or any agency involved that can actually provide some shelter for these individuals?
I'm going to ask you to, Amy McDill from the Riverside program and Arlene Chen from the San Bernardino programs, they probably would be better able to answer that
question. Because I think, what happens with homelessness is area A sends them over to area B to C to D. Suddenly you get to Z and you're back to A again. And I'm just wondering if there, any type of housing or shelter that we're working with.
If you wouldn't mind asking, and they may be able to provide an answer to that.
We do have comment cards for Ms. Chun and Ms. McNeil. Oh, okay. So when they're up for their comments, we can ask them those questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Do the board members have any other questions for this presentation before we go to those comment cards? Go ahead.
Ms. Dunham, is there any data that gives us some information on the contamination that has been contributed by homelessness?
Yeah, that is the work we're doing right now, Dr. Rivera, is, I mentioned that SAPA has been, conducting some studies, and we have a additional study that was just approved that we're going to be doing through 2021 to try to determine how we can quantify that potential impact. So that data and information and that monitoring program is in process. And I don't know, Rick, with SAPA, if there's any additional detail you can provide in response to Dr. Rivera's question with respect to those studies.
All I'd like to say at this moment now is that we're currently, we have a study that we're looking to fund to do additional monitoring, but we haven't worked out the exact details of that yet. We're working with the two flood control districts, San Bernardino County and Riverside County, on some tweaks to the scope that we're going to issue with our RFP. And we're hoping to get that out shortly, but we're still working on that with our consultant team.
Good. Thank you.
I have a couple of questions. Unless anybody else on the board wants to go first, feel free. Ms. Dunham, thank you for your presentation. I appreciate that. So the wet weather TMDL deadline is 2025.
That is correct.
What was the dry weather deadline?
2015.
That's 20. So we're 7 years behind the dry weather deadline.
We are 7 years behind the dry weather deadline with respect to the waste load allocation. But again, as Barbara indicated, the comprehensive bacteria reduction plans, implementation of them in the MS4 permit is basically what we call our water quality based effluent limit. So the MS4s are in compliance with the TMDL by implementing the bacteria reduction plans.
Right. You've defined compliance as implementation of the bacteria plan.
Correct.
Okay. So I mean, this is an awful lot to try to take in. So you have it had a big reduction in dry weather flow. It was 75% or something like that. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And at the same time that there's been a reduction in the flow from the POTWs.
That is correct.
So what's the net effect of that on the ability to meet the TMDL?
Well, the net effect is what we're, you know, is potentially the fact that I think the 75% was the within river source of the bacteria load. So we're at the question is how much of the bacteria concentration load that we are seeing, is it actually controllable or is it from uncontrollable sources, right? Whether it's natural or, you know, from sloughing off the sediment. So we are, you know, it's kind of becomes a very difficult issue with respect to making determinations. And as we've seen, we did as part of our 2019 synoptic study, if we had the same amount of POTW effluent in 2007, now we would be meeting those concentration waste load allocations, basically because you'd have more flow and dilution. But what we do see is with less flow from high quality POTW effluent, we are then not having that, you know, the potential availability of high quality water to dilute out those concentrations. So that is one of the, you know, impacts that we see. But water conservation itself is such a great thing. It's, you know, kind of a double-edged sword there.
Yeah. So you end up, you know, measuring the impact by both the bacteria in a given set of water, and that depends upon how much is flowing in the river at any time.
Right.
Okay. My third question was, so you determine that 75% of the dry weather bacteria load is now from in-river sources.
Correct.
All right, so I guess I have a two-part question. What do you mean by in-river sources?
Well, by in-river, we mean we know it's not from the MS4s because it's upstream of where dry weather flow would come in. We know it's not from the POTW effluent because we know what the quality of the water is from the POTW effluent. So it, you know, it's then determining, and we have identified as part of the synoptic study.
Let me stop you a second. I don't understand what in river means then.
Well, it could be within the sediment. Like, so we've got some studies that we intend to do that can evaluate how much, you know, may come in from recreators, people in the river themselves, right? Bacteria can come into the river from those that are recreating, wildlife, horses. That's what we determine as an in-river source. We just kind of lumped it as one category, but it's, you know, basically something coming into the river that isn't out from the MS4.
And we really haven't paid a whole lot of attention to that, I presume.
Well, it's, you know, the question is that a controllable source that the MS4 program has any control over, or does that become a uncontrollable source that has to be accounted for when we address the a potential update to the TMDLs.
Okay. And then I did have one more. So basically, I think what you said is that there's no longer any dry weather flow from the Chino dairies. So they're not contributing to the problem at all.
That is my understanding as well. And in the 2014 report that was submitted for the agricultural sources evaluation that was put together by the Chino Basin Water Master and the Milk Producers Council, they basically indicate that they're, you know, based upon the program that the dairies implement for how they control their lagoons, their wastewater, and all the requirements in their CAFO permit, there is no dry weather flow coming out of the dairy area into the watershed.
Okay. I have one overall comment about this, but probably best left for the end, I think, when we've had all the people talk. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Rick, this is Tom Rivera again. Rick, where do we find the large concentration of homeless people along this area that we're talking about?
Oh, my. I know from looking at pictures on the river, but I can't tell you exact the places from streets or so. This is, I believe, around Mission Avenue, possibly. They do go a long extent of the river, especially within the city of Riverside. And I don't know if you guys can turn it over to either Amy McNeil or Arlene Chun, but they probably have a much better picture of where the people are on the river than I do off the top of my head.
No, I live next to the Santa Ana River in Golden, and we do not see, I don't see a large concentrations of homeless encampment along the river. So that's why I was curious.
So why don't we, if no one else has any questions, we can open it up to our commenters. Seems like we have a couple questions for them, but I just want to do a final call for the board members for this particular, for these three experts. And I'm not seeing any. I'm trying to look panically at the, you know, Hollywood squares here. So I'm not seeing any. Okay, so I think we can move to the comment. We have two comment cards. I'm not sure what the process is and who goes first, Jeannie or Hope. Do you guys? I'm phoning a friend here, everyone.
I think we can ask Arlene Chung to speak first, and then Amy after Arlene. So, great. AGP, could you promote both Arlene and Amy, Ms. Chung and Ms.
Manila? Yes, give me just a moment.
Thank you.
Okay, they both promoted to panelists. I should be able to speak.
Okay, so I think there we go.
There we go. It feels good to be promoted. Thank you, Madam Chair.
That was all AGP. I had nothing to do with it.
Thank you, AGP. Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Madam Chair. Good morning, board members. Arlene Chun. I'm the Stormwater Program Manager for the San Bernardino County Stormwater Program. Before I answer questions I'd like to say on behalf of the San Bernardino County Flood Control District, the county and our cities, I would like to thank the board for your time today for us to update you about the Middle Santa Ana River TMDL Task Force efforts. As Teresa and Rick presented and seen in your handout, the task force has accomplished a lot in the last 15 plus years or so, far more than a single MS4 program can accomplish on its own. So this task force has allowed the San Bernardino County program to work with your staff, with Hope, with Mark, now Barbara and their staff, SAWPA, Riverside County Flood Control, and the county staff, cities from both our counties, the ag and dairy communities, technical experts, and others to review all that data you just saw a snippet of today, collaborate, brainstorm, solve issues, and keep moving forward. We look forward to continue working with Barbara and her staff and you, the regional board, and other task force members to reduce these bacteria loads in the Middle Santa Ana watershed, at least understand them as well, too. So thank you again for this opportunity. And I believe it was board member Rue who had a question about during the cleanups.
Yes.
Homeless cleanups. If correct me if I'm wrong, board member, you were asking, is there an agency that tries to house the homeless during cleanups?
Right. When you encounter the encampments, these homeless individuals and perhaps families need to go somewhere. I mean, they're there because they don't have anywhere else to go. Do we have a way to find shelter for them? Or do we just move them to another location?
The answer is yes, there is a process. It is actually an ongoing process, board member. Under our sheriff's department, it's called the HOPE program, Homeless Outreach Proactive Enforcement. It is run by three sheriff deputies and their staff, and they collaborate with our behavioral services and social services departments of the county. They are constantly doing reach outreach to these homeless. I mean, they know them on a personal basis. The first name, they know their situation, and they try to contact them at least almost daily, not just during cleanup. So I don't know the number offhand, but the sheriff has indicated that it takes a lot of one-on-one contact to actually reach out to a person and for that person to make the decision to seek services. So there is constant outreach going on here in San Bernardino County. I'm sure there's a similar process in Riverside County. So we do try to help them constantly.
But so we come upon an encampment. We have all these other entities helping us, which is good.
Yes.
A person is homeless. We take their possessions and put them in storage. If I'm understanding the problem. Where do they go? Where does the homeless person go?
I'm not sure where they go. I believe it's different places. Some do go with services. I'm not sure of the exact destination. It can vary.
I just hope we're not in a situation where with all these wonderful entities out there, cities, counties, other agencies, and, you know, although we're not charged with homelessness, homeless affect the watershed. And, you know, I'm hoping it's just not a case of, okay, you're here, we're cleaning up, we've taken your possessions, please move on, go somewhere else. So, because that just makes the problem worse.
Understood, board member. We do try to keep it on as an ongoing basis.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
And then real quickly, just I'm not seeing any other questions from, does anyone have any other questions for Ms. Chun? No.
I don't have a question, Madam Chair. I just want to say to Ms. Chun and your team how appreciative we are of that extraordinary amount of work you've accomplished as an agency. It was a big lift, and it makes a real difference in the health and welfare of all of those that we all collectively represent. So thank you.
Thank you, board member.
I just want to go back to my question as to the identifying of the large number of homeless that are in San Bernardino County. Where is the concentration of these homeless individuals, Arlene?
It's hard to say, board member. Anecdotally, we know they're in the river. Sometimes they are hard to see. They're behind the trees. I do see them on my way to the office. They're on the sidewalks as well. So it's a little hard to track them down. I mean, they do move constantly, and it would be probably a better question for our sheriff's department to answer. I'd be happy to get you an answer if you would like, Ms. Dr. Rivera.
I would appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay.
Real quickly, Ms. Chun, I think too, it would be helpful to understand from the sheriff's department, I think, in related to board member Rue's question, like, do they have a outreach? Like, it's most likely they have an outreach coordinator to connect with the homeless people. That's what I make up from my experience. But you know, it's not like an outreach person can say, hey, here's some lodging for you. Would you like to go? Right. Like it's a decision that person has to make. So it might be, if you're getting the information for board member Rivera, it might be helpful to see kind of what that outreach does look like as it relates to housing as well. I think in response to board member Rue's question, because they may have better knowledge of that than
Sure. Yeah, if
that makes sense.
Madam Chair, if I could just interject here.
Sure.
I think this is something that we've touched on in our Human Right to Water resolution and activities. And I can work with Ms. Chun and Ms. McNeil to kind of capture what those two counties are doing with regard to homelessness and bring that back to the board, perhaps in an EO report item or as a regular agenda item, because I think there's a lot of work that's been going on. And we can also talk with the Orange County folks as well who are also doing some of the homeless work as well. So.
Yeah, I think it's, I think that's perfect. You know, homelessness is an issue that kind of crosses a lot of jurisdictions, and I use that in kind of air quotes, areas. So I think that that would be helpful. And then I think that the thing that one of the things that helps give us context, I think, is kind of the count. So I'm not sure if Riverside County or San Bernardino County does do a homeless count. You know, like I know LA County does, but if that might give a little bit of context too, if we have that sort of data.
That sounds good.
Okay, that being said, sorry, I didn't mean to take, I think Ms. McNeil had a comment card in as well, so go for it.
Thank you, Madam Chair Peterson and members of the board for this opportunity. My name is Amy McNeil and I am representing Riverside County Flood Control and Water Conservation District as the principal permittee of the MS4 permit in Riverside County. So talking on behalf of the district and the cities as well. About a month ago, I spoke in front of you guys about the district's efforts to keep our community safe during storm events of the post-wildfire areas. But today I'm here to express the district's support for the task force efforts to address bacteria impairment in the Middle Santa Ana River and address these TMDLs, which happens to be one of the hardest things to address in water quality. A lot of times it's all about retention and just getting it out of there. But one of the things I wanted to highlight, because I feel one of the key benefits to this task force is the collaboration between the permittee agencies and the valuable conversations we get from the regional board staff during those meetings. At the last task force meeting, we presented the results of the Magnolia Center storm drain investigation study. And during and after the presentation, the regional board staff asked questions, they provided suggestions to be considered in a technical write-up and what we would do in the next steps. The district and city staff that were presenting the material expressed gratitude for the input and were thankful to have you to be able to create even more robust and successful studies in the future. So the collaboration of this task force is more than just a combined money avenue, but it's truly a sharing of the science and working towards this common goal. I'd like to add to Tess's comment about the Phoenix Avenue storm drain. I did confirm the contractor was out on the site yesterday, so it is definitely moving forward. The construction schedule is 2 months, so it should be completed mid-May. And for the other ones that we were talking about, starting to think about wet weather, I wanted in preparations for the next five-year budget, we had approved in our last budget $6.9 million to help Hurupa Community Service Districts on their recycled water treatment facility or distribution center. It is now gonna increase almost twice as much again. And it's really we're trying to help Hurupa Community Service District in order to leverage grant funding as well, kind of putting the matching costs so that they can get that money. And we're really hopeful that getting this will help reduce these ongoing costs of these diversion projects so that we can get further partnerships and opportunities to capture additional stormwater capture. So thanks again for this opportunity to just express our thankfulness for this task force. I really do see it's a definite opportunity where we get regional board staff's connection right away. It's not, we can have candid conversations and move forward. As far as the homeless, I know in one of our homeless encampment cleanups of Whole Lake, it was an entire community of people going. As the district, we have the manpower of actually cleaning up what's there, the trash that's left behind. But beforehand, there was a lot of efforts of partnering with the city of Riverside and the county social services. They brought everyone down and they actually worked with those homeless people. As Madam Chair, you expressed saying that it is up to them to decide. So sometimes it's heartbreaking because you can have all the forces there and they still say no. That's hard. Some of them choose they want to be there. So there's a website on County of Riverside, so I can coordinate and get those that information to you. But they have an entire program and they call it the County CORE program, and it's Continuum of Care, Coordination, Oversight, Reporting, and Evaluation. And underneath that, they have several different organizations to get you what you need. There's the emergency food and shelter program. There's the homeless management information system where the county does their counts of how many homeless are out there. So there's definitely things there. There's a lot of collaboration that does happen. I know the city of Riverside put up 10 small units and there was 56 beds there that was recently built. I believe the county does have some homeless shelters, but I think a lot of them are in the city of Indio. They're out in the desert, they're not here. So there's been an effort to start building them here. So you address your local homeless and get them to a local shelter. Board Member Rivera, you talked about where the homeless. For Santa Ana, we could offer our drone survey that we did it for a couple of years. They tend to be at where bridges cross the river. They tend to congregate there. I don't know if the bridges offer a little bit of extra protection or it's for the access. They can gain access there. So they kind of tend to congregate there. But Van Buren Boulevard, upstream of that, there's a treatment facility plant and just up around there, there's a kind of like a bench area that they tend to congregate, which is also where the outlet of, I believe, Whole Lake is, where we had our big cleanup that we did do. And then as you go upstream all the way to the 60 freeway, about every bridge crossing, there seems to be a bit of a gathering there that from our aerial survey. So they're throughout, they like the vegetation that seems to keep them protected as well. So anywhere where there's a lot of lush trees, they'll tend to be within that area as well. I believe I've answered all the questions that came up. Let me know if there's any further.
Great, thank you. Is there any further questions for our two commenters or the rest of the team that presented today?
I have a question for Ms. McNeil. I understand that if someone is homeless, you know, no one can force them to go into a shelter. So there's a homeless encampment. All these groups are involved with cleaning it up. Somebody doesn't want to go to a shelter. What do we do with them? Do you leave them there?
They are given, so before we can do anything, we have to put a notice, a 72-hour posted notice to let them know. Because for us, we need to get that stuff cleaned up because here we have a big storm coming and it can clog things, it can cause flooding, it can cause a lot of issues. Plus, we want them out of harm's way. So in that 72-hour notice, we let them know, hey, we're coming. That is usually what will happen is they'll pack up their things and move to wherever they're going to go to next. If they're not wanting, you know, that help, that's what they'll do. And that's where you were talking about. Then we get into an issue of, okay, we put our 72-hour notice, they move and they move over to Caltrans right away. And then Caltrans gives them a 72-hour notice. And guess what? They turn around and they move right back in. Yes, we do definitely see the homeless encampments reoccurring in similar places.
When we send a notice, do we let them know that because some of them may not know, if you're homeless, you have 72 hours, but we may be able to find a place for you to live. Okay.
I know in the big event that we did at Whole Lake, we had services there that they were actually talking, because as the flood control agency, we don't actually have a homeless department there to offer those services. We can refer them and we can give them numbers, but a lot of times I think they just chuckle.
But this is after the 72-hour notice. So we put out a 72-hour notice.
In that case, I think it was at the 72-hour notice. I think the event was to come in, say, hey, we have to come in here, but here we have these services.
Okay.
I can verify that because okay.
Because it seems like it becomes a circular issue. And I'm wondering if, you know, when somebody posts a 72-hour notice that they, you know, couldn't do something that indicates, you know, we may be here with services that can help you or something like that. Because, you know, if I were homeless and I see notice saying in 72 hours, I'm probably going to just up and go somewhere else because I view they're just cleaning things up. They don't care about me. And perhaps, you know, if I saw the notice and it said 72 hours, but when we arrive, we'll be able to provide services or something like that. Maybe I want to stay and meet the people.
I think you raise a great point, because I think that's why what we tried to do with Whole Lake in that event, because it was such a massive encampment that we brought those people with us, because that's the kind of coordination that needs to occur under the multiple agencies of each one of these cleanups to have those partners. Funding's really difficult for all that, but when we've come to a massive one, we did make that extra effort to reach out to the other agencies to have them down there with us.
I think that
I just view with the homeless, to me, it's a personal issue, but in that sense, it's a moral issue. And somehow we're going to have to find a way to shelter people. So that's not the job of the water industry, but.
Yeah. Thank you, Board Member Ruth. Thank you for your passion around this. I think that the points that you raise are probably things that our executive officer can bring back when we do bring back this topic as it relates to the water board. There's so many issues. It's a complex issue. We know this. And so I think that will be a good topic when we bring it back around, and either in her officer's report or if it becomes an agenda as it relates to, I think Anne Sturdivant, is that who?
Yes, it
maybe?
Is.
Yes. Yeah. And maybe we'll have her back and kind of do another agenda item at a future meeting. So thank you. Okay, great. So thank you for the presentations. I'm not seeing any other questions. So I think we are going to move on to item 11 and 12. So underground. Go ahead.
Before we're done. So first of all, I want to thank everybody for the presentation. The whole effort's incredibly impressive. To see what it goes into. I used to teach TMDLs to law students, and it was really a simple thing, right? You just couldn't meet the water quality standard, so you do a waste load, you do a TMDL and a waste load allocation, that solves the problem. But you've certainly shown how it's just nowhere near as simple as the idea. And I also am really impressed with the collaborative aspects of it, that so many agencies are working together. I know our board area, we're known for that, and it certainly produces results. But one thing is, it's the regional board's TMDL here. It's nobody else's. It's ours, and we're the ones that are responsible for it. And it's in existence because the water quality standard wasn't met to begin with. So it's from my perspective, at least, the TMDLs are really important. And I'm left here after listening to the presentation with the idea that I don't understand nearly enough about this process. I mean, I listened to it carefully. The presentations were wonderful, but it's really complex. And I think, for board members, it's extraordinarily difficult to get a handle on this. And yet we just can't delegate this. I mean, we can't just say it's a TMDL here. We have this collaborative body. They're going to go solve it. We need to have some supervisorial authority over this, or at least more, I think, than I feel comfortable with now. I'm left with in an uncomfortable position about as a board member what I'm doing to make sure the TMDL is met. So I just want to, that's my personal feeling after listening to all this, and I want to express that.
Dan, I think I had the same feeling that you mentioned, because throughout the presentations, I kept asking myself, who is responsible for this? And who is the person that that will not only has identified some of these issues, but who is going to be responsible for providing solutions to these areas that we've identified? So I think I agree with you that perhaps we should be taking a more proactive stance in this issue that was presented to us this morning.
Yeah, I Madam Chair, if I may, I think that's a really good point. These particular TMDLs were established a number of years ago and have been on this implementation path since 2005-2006. We have done updates to the board periodically. It has been a while. It has been a long time since we've done an update. And we can certainly plan on doing more periodic updates on this particular TMDL, But as you know, we also have other TMDLs that are being implemented as well throughout our entire region. And so maybe what we can think about is scheduling, you know, regular briefings on those TMDLs and the status throughout the year. So we can do that.
Great.
I think it would help me to get a comprehensive report on it before the meeting too. I mean, I didn't have the PowerPoints. So I was just listening to you trying to follow along. And I'm just not smart enough to do that. I'm sorry. It's hard. I can't take it in like that. So I would suggest that as we go forward.
That's a great point. I mean, I think that when we meet in person, we do have the PowerPoints with us. So it's a little different as well. And they were very detailed PowerPoints, I will say. And you guys did an excellent job presenting. But I do like to, I kept writing down, like, should I have read this? Where was this? So in the PowerPoint. So good point. Good point for both board members. And thank you, Hope, for wanting to bring that back at future meetings. So that being said, do we feel comfortable? Can we move forward through item 11 and 12? No other comments on this particular item? I am not seeing them. Okay, perfect. So item 11 and 12 are both corrective action plans and then site closure reports. They are received in files. And I think that that is all I have to do with them. Is that perfect? And then item 13 is executive officer report. So I'm going to turn it over to Hope.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to highlight a couple of items in the executive officer's report for this meeting. The first is that Chair Peterson had asked for priorities for the regional board staff and for the board for the next year. And so I've provided her and the board members as well what those priorities are. So there's a write-up at the end of this executive officer's report. And then the other thing I want to highlight is the racial equity initiative that the State Water Board and the regional water boards have undertaken. It's a very important initiative that started probably about August. It was initiated in August, and I participate on the steering committee for that initiative. And Celia Passos, an engineering geologist, is also a participant on the working group of that effort. And so one of the goals of the racial equity initiative is to recognize some of the systemic racial issues within the state and within the water boards, and to try to address those through water board programs and how we outreach to our community. We want to make sure we do that in a racially equitable manner. And so in order to move this process along, we're working toward a resolution that the State Water Board may consider and adopt in the next few months. And I would also like to bring to this board racial equity resolution that is consistent with the State Water Board's resolution. So that would be something I would be looking to bring to you in the near future. So I just wanted to mention that. And that's all I wanted to highlight on my report.
Great. Thank you. So moving on to item 14, regional board member and executive officer communications. If there's any of that you guys would like to do now, now's the time.
Madam Chair, I will just say that I sent you all an email asking you to hold the dates for the continued Poseidon hearing. I will follow up with those dates once we know the universe of comments that we receive on Monday, and so we can solidify those dates next week.
Right.
Madam Chair, I was just going to ask for clarification from Executive Director Hope about the equity resolution. You don't need any further direction from us. You'll just bring that whenever you have a draft, because I'd love to support directing that we do receive something in regards to what you were mentioning, but I didn't know if you needed any formal direction from the board.
if you want to give me formal direction, that would be fine. I think that what I would propose to do is go on and do a draft. Maybe we would put it on an agenda in a workshop type format to get input from the board and from the public as well, and then bring that back for the board's consideration at a later date.
Oh, okay. Well, that works for me. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else? I just want to say thanks for your patience with me at this very first meeting. Hoping I'm doing Board Member Rue proud. So,
thank you for taking the task on.
Yeah. Yeah, Board Member Selmy. Other thing, at this point, I think we are going to adjourn open session and move into closed session. Keep in mind, there is a different Zoom link for that. Jeannie should have sent that to you in your inboxes. So you guys will log off of this one, shut down completely, and then log into the next one. And I see our counsel. I see her. And so go ahead.
So the board's going to go into closed session to consider personnel matters. Under Government Code Section 1126, Subdivision A1. And that is all I have.
Perfect. So with that, this open session part is now adjourned. Thank you.
Great.
For clarification, will you guys be coming back in here at all, or just the full end? You won't be back for this webinar?
We will not be returning back to this meeting. We'll be
perfect. Thank you so much.
Yes. Thank you.